An intense relationship between two broken young men ignites a frenzy of desire, obsession, desperation, and violence in the debut novel These Violent Delights by Micah Nemirover. Micah studied art history and queer theory at the University of Connecticut, where he wrote his MA thesis on gender anxiety. The book is a plunge into the psyche. It is suspenseful and humane. Again, the name of the new novel is These Violent Delights, and it's a pleasure to welcome Micah Nemirover to the roundtable this morning. Micah, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Really nice to have you on the program. I enjoyed this novel greatly. Tell us how it came about. How did it come to be this story of these two broken young men?
A lot of it was honestly kind of an exorcism of my own teenage angst, which did not have a body count, but it. but I was a very lonely teenager, very kind of alienated. I was for a long time the only queer person I knew. So I was really interested in retrospect in sort of this alienation that can come from being a lonely queer teenager, and how it sort of makes you vulnerable to these kind of toxic aspirational friendships, same gender friendships, because you don't really have anyone to model yourself on in the culture. And this was true when I was a teenager, and it's really true in the 70s. So it's sort of like the first queer person you meet. You could sometimes just latch onto that person and try to build your identity around that person, especially if they're like very charismatic, which Julian, one of the main characters, is. I was just kind of working through the memory of not only this loneliness, but the sort of the anger that it brought forward in me as a teenager.
We read in the book about Paul and Julian. And as you mentioned, this book takes place in the 1970s. 1970s Pittsburgh. What was it about that time period that you wanted to explore? Because obviously queer identity at that point was much different, as you noted, than it is now. So was there, was that part of the timing, the date stamp of the book that you wanted?
That was definitely part of it. One thing that was really crucial for me is a lot of the book is also about Jewish identity,
right.
Specifically post-war Jewish American identity. What I was really interested in the 70s was that it's one generation removed from the Holocaust, and it's this very sort of cynical point in American history where not only was Watergate starting to happen, it's sort of in the background of the book, but it's sort of after the idealism of the 60s started to kind of fizzle, and the Vietnam War and news breaking about things like the Tuskegee experiment. It felt like a time when someone like Paul with a family history affected by the Holocaust would be sort of seeing threads of that in American culture also. And sort of not being able to believe in America as this like special case, this like beacon of human rights. So that was one factor that was really interesting to me. And I chose Pittsburgh in particular because it was sort of at that point in history, the point at which the steel industry was starting to collapse. And so it parallels the sort of falling idealism of the era itself in a way that I thought was really interesting. So it was just kind of a convergence of thematic and historical necessities that I was just really interested in.
Let us talk for a moment about the relationship between these two, between Julian and Paul, because it is a friendship. It turns deeper. And I mean, and you write about this. I mean, they really are in their own bubble, aren't they?
Yes. And that was definitely kind of drawn from less toxic, but still emotionally fraught and unhealthy relationships that I had when I was a teenager, where you get so wrapped up in this other person that you develop like this codependent internal language with each other, and you're very like you're wrapped up in kind of performing a version of yourself that will impress the other person. I think that with these two characters is happening on both sides in different ways, which was something I really wanted to explore. Because often when relationships like this are portrayed in pop culture, there's sort of a dominant character who is the center of the relationship, and then the insecure person who's kind of tagging along after. And so I was really interested in exploring the complexities of this kind of relationship and the ways in which the person who seems more confident and charismatic and is more of the aspirational figure is also kind of performing a version of themselves that feeds into this mutually toxic dynamic.
I was interested in your writing about Julian because when Paul like says something and tells him to like shut up, he just recoils. He doesn't know what to do. It says a lot because he knows he doesn't want to be talked to like that, but also that it rocks the world because I guess in his mind, the relationship shouldn't be like that.
Yeah, I think both of them in different ways want it to be asymmetrical in that way that sort of the archetypal depiction shows, and the fact that it isn't, the fact that it's more complicated is kind of difficult for both of them. Neither of them want to see themselves in this more complex dynamic necessarily, and they don't really want to see each other in that dynamic either. Yeah, Julian was an interesting character. It took me a few drafts to get a bead on him. He's less similar to the role I played in those kinds of weird teenage friendships myself. Like I had more in common with Paul, at least on a surface level. So mm-hmm. It was interesting to kind of try and get into his head and retroactively understand a little more what that side of that relationship is like.
I asked this question just because it surprised me a little bit, but I mean, the name of the book is These Violent Delights, so it shouldn't have surprised me that much. However, did you expect the book to be as violent as it was, that it became?
The kind of central crime that the story is built around was always there, but the dynamic definitely evolved in a way that was very interesting. It became more toxic as I wrote it. What I was sort of exploring with this book is kind of the worst case scenario of this sort of aspirational codependent relationship and sort of how bad it could get. and so it definitely reached a level of intensity that was really emotionally taxing to maintain as I was writing. Yeah, These Violent Delights actually was not the original title. It had a very mediocre title when I approached my agent with it. But it's from Romeo and Juliet, and I like that. It felt right with the level of adolescent intensity that the book has overall, and especially the dynamic between them. So it felt like it really encapsulated something that I discovered over the course of writing the book.
You write in the author's note, the most prevailing concern of These Violent Delights, of course, is the kind of toxic and identity-consuming romantic friendship that many queer people experience in their teens. While obsessive love is clearly not bound by gender or orientation, there is, I think, a dialectic of both wanting and wanting to be that is specific to same-gender relationships of this kind. My own experiences of these relationships felt like another lament thread I carried inside me, one that fed off my alienation from the outside world by affirming it. That comes through very much in the book.
Thank you.
And I'm interested in how that, because as you say, it is something that happens not only to many people in their teen years, but this really goes back even the question of putting the book in the 70s, but how that is different now and even in your growing up.
I feel like young people now have more The fact that queer people are more visible now than they were even in my own youth. I was sort of a 90s kid, and I was a teenager in the early 2000s. So I feel like young people now have more of a nuanced cultural understanding of what a queer person can be and how a queer person can feel. At the time that I was a teenager, like that, there was some depiction of queer people in popular culture, but it was always sort of like aggressively positive in a way that I had a lot of trouble connecting with because I was such an angry, sad child, and I had all this resentment towards society that I just never saw reflected in queer characters, or it was all very role model driven, and I didn't want a role model. I wanted someone who kind of reflected like the internal moral turmoil and anger that I was feeling at that point in my life, and the insecurity, and that was sort of something I was playing with when I wrote the book, is that I wanted to go back to a level of isolation and loneliness and anger that was fueled by not seeing yourself in the outside world and being really, really put upon by these norms that you're never going to fit into.
I read a review of this book, and they said that this book very much allows us to know what it means to be Jewish in America. I first want to know if you agree with that, but also going back to my original question of setting it at the time you would, because you wanted to have that generation removed from the Holocaust, of what that added to the novel.
A lot of what I was working out was my grandfather was a refugee, so I do have a personal connection, and it's an interesting point in American history to be Jewish because there was just like before World War II, there was no real question in American culture that Jews are not white. That really evolved over the course of the 20th century, and so that in the 70s, just as you're also dealing with this like generational trauma from the Holocaust, there's also this growing sense that in certain contexts you can be white, and then in other contexts you still aren't. So I was really interested in this kind of tension of what Jewish identity was sort of negotiating at that point in history. The boys' families sort of present contrasting notions of being Jewish American. Paul's family is not particularly assimilated. They're very proud of their heritage. They would never try to pass. And Julian's family is trying to fit into this really preppy, WASPy milieu, and so they're passing. And so I was just really interested in how both of their experiences of Jewishness interacted with the sense of being other in America, but also interacted with that kind of provisional whiteness that was evolving at that point. So it's, yeah, I was definitely that there are in my own family history aspects of both of their families, and so I was definitely interested in negotiating that tension.
You mentioned a few moments ago about your anger, the anger that you felt as a teen that you were growing up with, the anger that you dealt with. In a way, was this a cathartic book to write?
Oh, absolutely. It was sort of a double-edged sword because I was exercising all of this old trauma that I couldn't process at the time because I was too close to it. So it was really cathartic to kind of take what I had been feeling in my youth and sort of just turn it up to a level of intensity that I was afraid at the time that it might reach, because my anger was so big and overwhelming and I didn't have anywhere to put it. So it was definitely a really cathartic experience. It was also, as always, I think when you're processing trauma of some kind, it was often emotionally intense, in a way that didn't feel good, but that needed to happen. So it, yeah, I don't think I'm going to write a book much like this again, because I did kind of work out what I needed to work out with it. But it was a lot. So, yeah.
Does fiction, do you think, should it be something of which you use to work things out? Or is there a freedom that comes in the next project where you can just say, okay, I want to tell a story?
It depends a lot on the author. For me, I'm always processing something. Part of the reason I write things set in the past, that the next project is set in the 80s. So it's, I'm an art historian by training, and I always called myself an art historian with a capital H. I understand things, both historically and in terms of my own traumas and my own emotions. I understand them in retrospect, putting them in context. And so it's writing for me is often an emotional excavation. And my editor, Erin Wicks, at Harper, she's really interested in literature that's centered around this catharsis and trauma. Mm-hmm. And so it was a really good working relationship, because we were on the same page about the kind of writing I in particular was doing. And I love telling a story, but it's definitely always coming from the guts for me. It's a very, therapeutic, maybe, kind of process.
Well, let me
sometimes therapeutic.
Let me end with this question, and I ask it selfishly, because this is the type of book I love to read. And why do you think that we find ourselves struck and wanting to read about the tortured and those who need the catharsis and are working through these heavy issues as they're being torn apart emotionally?
I think part of it is that moral reckonings and dealing with your own demons are just some of the most fertile ground for telling a good story. That there's sort of this built-in tension that I definitely enjoy, like, and I think that reading that kind of story is, it is cathartic, but it's cathartic in a very specific way of extrapolating from the internal struggles that you have to kind of externalize them and follow them through to sometimes their worst conclusions, and just kind of see, look at the things you fear about yourself. It really fuels drama, but it also causes kind of a level of emotional engagement. I wrote this book because I wanted to read the book and nobody mm-hmm. else had written it, so it's yeah.
And what kind of feedback have you gotten from people who have perhaps have lived a similar life, in the sense of some of the issues that you're dealing with, and how it helped them?
It's really honestly humbling and touching when people reach out to me and tell me that this story resonated with them emotionally in a way that they describe as being similar to what I experienced when I was writing it. I honestly, when I was writing, I didn't imagine it ever being published. And so the fact that it's finding readers who felt the same things I did when they were young, and that this is like resonating with their own traumas and their own past, and the sort of intense feelings that I was also processing. It's just it makes you feel less alone in a lot of ways, and also it means a lot to me, on a personal level, just knowing that I could give kind of a cathartic experience to another person. It's hard to believe, after working on it mostly alone for so many years. Yeah, it's really wonderful for me.
The name of the new novel is These Violent Delights. It is published by Harper. Micah Nemirover, I thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much. It was great to talk to you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.